Let me tell you about a product that I am using personally, and I really think this works. You know, beetroot juice has been used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, and studies show that it can increase athletic performance and stamina by 16%. So call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com, and you can get a 30-day supply free of this great product. It comes with your first order, and it's backed by a money-back guarantee. 800-738-2198. Welcome back to our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, and today we're answering your questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the place to send your questions, and we will answer them as we're about to with more questions during this segment. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good, good. Okay. All right, so what's up this hour?
Okay, John writes, we hear so much today about the microbiome and how essential it is for disease prevention, longevity. How can one get an analysis of his microbiome that explains its health implications? Also, what would be a simple guide to follow to keep our microbiome optimized? That's a topic for a clinical focus.
Oh, that's absolutely a topic for a clinical focus. And, you know, of course, there's a lot of emphasis on the microbiome. The microbiome harkens back to a concept, the dysbiosis, which is, you know, a mismatch between the organisms that inhabit your intestine and the optimal blend that could properly support your digestion, your immune system, and so on. We know that these bacteria talk to our immune system through internal crosstalk. There's lymphoid tissue, immune tissue in our intestinal tract, which acts as kind of a like a radio receiver for the signals that are given out by these bacteria. And it has to do with mood, brain, cardiovascular risk, metabolism. Even our weight may be determined by this. And so much and so much. And in fact, you know, actually, I wrote an article a while back. You can look it up. It's called Who's in Charge Here? You know, you or your microbiome. And to some extent, even when it comes to cravings and when it comes to mood, your microbiome influences that. So when people say, I don't know, I have this inordinate craving, it's as if I'm possessed. Well, maybe you are. You know, you've got...
We are now being called superorganisms. There are more bacteria in and on our body than there are cells of our body. That's something to really wrap your mind around.
Well, okay, so how do you know? Well, we gain a purchase on it with certain tests, stool tests, and there's a couple of urine tests that we can do to determine if you're at risk of having imbalances. A blood test can tell you if you have candida, although that's not a 100% test. Sometimes you culture the stool to see if yeast grows out, but yeast isn't the only problem. It's abnormal bacteria. And, and newer tests are focusing not on one or two bad species, but the whole climate of bacteria, since there are literally thousands of species. The predominance of certain categories over another can influence our health. And this is a science that's just in its infancy. We're just beginning to explore it. It's like the early days of space exploration and astronomy, you know, where we just began to visualize the universe through telescopes. And we're going to gain more knowledge because people are accumulating knowledge. There's the eubiome project, which is kind of like, you know, the DNA project, the, you know, sequencing the genome, the human genome project would sequence DNA. The eubiome project, which you can get your stool analyzed via as a consumer, they'll give you some information, but they won't tell you, you know, that you have a disease or anything per se, but they'll tell you if you have how you conform to normal patterns or abnormal patterns. That's a project that seeks to gather information about the correlation between certain conditions and variations in the intestinal flora. And so they're gathering information. I think we need to do more research. I'm going to be modest about our ability to predict disease based on the microbiome. I mean, another factor, of course, is not what's in your gut, but what traverses your gut wall and gets into your system. And there we measure intestinal permeability or leaky gut. You know, maybe that you have not the best flora, but perhaps if you have good gut integrity, you can keep the harmful toxins and allergens out. It's super complicated.
And it is.
I wish I could tell you that come on down. We got the test that's going to, we'll give you a report card on your poop.
Yeah. The best way for John or anybody to keep their microbiome optimized, the things that are that in their control, is what they eat and how they live. Really, you want to eat a clean diet. You don't want to eat junk. You don't want to feed bad bacteria in your gut. That's going to upset the ecology of your microbiome.
Right. Artificial sweeteners just came up as a culprit in terms of damaging the balance. Also, carboxymethyl cellulose, so-called emulsifiers, which are found in processed foods, damage the microbiome. So to the extent you don't consume chemicals or things with unpronounceable names, preservatives in foods are there for a purpose. They suppress the growth of bacteria. So, great, your food doesn't rot. It can sit on the shelf for, weeks and months. It's shelf-stable. That's great for the store and also to prevent you from getting food poisoning. But once you consume that, you're actually killing off beneficial bacteria in your gastrointestinal tract.
Yeah.
Then there's the issue of taking antibiotics. Some people stockpile them. They think, I'm going on a trip and I've got a little bit of a sore throat, and just in case, I'll take this antibiotic. Huge mistake, because even just one dosing with antibiotics can alter your intestinal balance for years and maybe permanently.
That's true. And that's when probiotics come in.
Yeah.
So.
And which only in, I got to say, in my opinion, probiotics were just in the infancy with that too. We're only partially replacing what we lose. And it, maybe different strokes for different folks in terms of what we need. So, the other issue, chlorinated water, fluoridated water, these are toxins. GMOs, contain higher levels of pesticides, or alternatively, may have elements which literally can cause genes to jump to the bacteria in your intestinal tract so that they elaborate toxins in your gut. This is a concern. So far,
let alone the pesticides in our produce if we're not eating organic.
Yeah. And we know, here's another one. This is amazing. There's so much evidence that this is important. Two studies have come up recently that support the importance of the microbiome. One is that it shows that if you use a dishwasher, which I got to say I do, just for convenience sake, you are... your kids are more likely to have allergies than if you hand wash your dishes.
Huh.
Now, why should
the dishwasher is said to clean better?
Yeah, because it cleans better and it completely sterilizes the dishes, which is kind of what you want, right? No, according to the hygiene hypothesis, maybe you want certain bacteria to get in your intestinal tract. So that's number one. Then a second study came out this month, which shows that people who use bleach to disinfect their kids are also more allergic.
Wow.
Okay, because you're completely sterilizing the environment. The bacteria that are supposed to maybe enter via your GI tract are completely eradicated. Mm-hmm. And maybe does something to your immune system.
Oh, absolutely. And, we've got a follow-up question here.
Sure.
John, thank you for your question. We've got a follow-up question that is related. This is from Lori. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I've been a user of probiotics for quite a while now, but I've been hearing lately about soil-based probiotics, like the Prescriptasys product, being superior because they're in the soil, among other reasons. Would love to hear your thoughts on the topic. Well, here's the thing. Probiotics are wonderful, but the soil-based organisms are said to be endospore-forming bacteria, which are hardier, and they're better able to withstand challenging environment of the stomach. That means that these soil-based probiotics, they differ from the regular probiotics because they're more likely to make it to the small intestinal tract.
And that's supposed to be a selling point for them.
Right. So they're said to colonize the gut more effectively. It's also said that it's closer to how our ancestors, they went to the field, they gathered, and they they ate, you know, from the ground, whereas now we're shopping in supermarkets and
right.
our food is very clean and all of that. But it's also about the taking up residence.
I hate when I get like sandy lettuce, right?
Mm.
So I don't really like get a lot of soil-based organisms because I wash, I soak it. And if I'm preparing the salad and people, you know, I see people kind of like crunching a little bit, I go, oh, man, I didn't clean the lettuce well. But maybe that's okay.
Maybe that's okay. Except for that distinct sandy grit that you get in between
right.
bites.
Well, it's a little natural silica. Never hurt, right? You know, uh-huh. you give people silica for their bones. But yeah. Anyway, we're currently not prescribing prescriptive
yeah.
cyst. Or soil-based organisms to our parents, to our patients.
To our parents.
To our parents. Yeah, I mean.
So is
that something we want to investigate from your
probably.
Research?
Probably. I think it's worth looking at. There have been some clinical trials on soil-based organisms. There was one in 2005, placebo-controlled double-blind study.
Mm-hmm.
That use prescriptive cysts
okay.
for irritable bowel syndrome.
At least it's
and,
been studied under scientific
yeah.
circumstances. That's good.
Yeah. Okay. So people with IBS got better from
right.
it, according to that particular study. So
now,
I think it's something we can investigate.
But it's a little scary because, you know, there's standard probiotics that have been used literally for millennia, the things
that's
that true. We use to ferment food with, you know, that we ferment sauerkraut with, that we make yogurt with, kefir,
mm-hmm.
and so on. And these things have, or even Saccharomyces boulardii, which has a history of traditional use in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is maybe a little newer, a little less likely to have been validated, studied properly, assessed for safety. And, you know, I'm not taking the position of the average conventional doctor who would say, what are you talking about? Soil-based organisms, that's eating dirt. That's crazy. You know,
not just that. Don't take your vitamins.
Right.
Oh.
And just, and why, you know, don't, why are you buying that junk? You know, it's going to make you sick. You know, I'm not taking that. I'm taking more of an open-minded view. And maybe, you know, maybe this is something that will advance to the forefront in microbiome management. But also you place a lot of emphasis with our patients on fermented foods, which is a great way.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that, please. We've done entire programs and podcasts on fermented foods.
Fermented and cultured foods, whether it be sauerkraut or kimchi, which is fermented cabbage as well. It's more an Asian variety. These are also probiotic foods. Kefir, yogurt, pickles, that have been lactic acid fermented, not vinegar fermented pickles.
Okay.
These are also important. Pickled vegetables as well. These are all probiotic foods that are also a source of probiotics, not just, you know, having to take a supplement.
And by the way, I search high and low for preservative-free pickles because what mm-hmm. Pickles that contain preservatives, they basically have been pickled and then they poison the ferment.
Yeah.
They actually stop the fermentation process for stability because if pickles continue to ferment, they'll turn into mush and they'll be digested away. But
right.
it's very actually kind of hard to find them. I just went to the store and I you know, there's only a couple of stores that
you might
offer
have
them.
To make your own.
Or you can make your own, obviously.
Or you can
it's
make
fun.
Your own.
That's fun. You know, and you can make them with whatever, you know, garlic and dill and, natural spices.
Yeah, a little salt, all that. I had a patient come in the other day. He was kind of walking awkwardly. His back was hurting him. I said, well, what happened to you? He said, well, I was making sauerkraut. So, you know, I had my baseball bat and I was mashing the cabbage.
That's crazy.
He was all excited about his sauerkraut.
Can you go on disability for that? It was like, you know, tell him, you know, so I was mashing my sauerkraut with a baseball bat.
I was making my probiotics and I hurt my back.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe the Yankees can use that for batting practice because they're not doing so well.
Lori, thank you for your question.
Yeah, let's not malign our home baseball team here.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have time for an additional question. What else is on our
agenda? Bob writes in, and he sent us an article about, he says, thought you would be interested in this article I found. It makes it very difficult to determine if we're doing anything right. And there was a study done on vitamin D out of Copenhagen that determined that too much vitamin D may be bad for cardiovascular health.
Okay.
They found a J-shaped curve of mortality, which was surprising because they were finding that a higher level of vitamin D, serum vitamin D, not supplemental, but serum vitamin D, may be a risk factor for those with coronary artery disease.
Okay.
And they looked at a sample of 250,000 people, or actually 16,000 were actually registered into the Danish Registry of Causes of Death, where they were able to determine mortality. And they found that those with a higher level of vitamin D had a higher level of mortality, which was very interesting.
Well, I think I know what you're saying, but just be clear. They found that the ones who had the very highest levels of vitamin D had a slightly higher risk of death, and the ones who had the lowest levels certainly had a higher risk.
Certainly
of mortality.
Had a risk,
but there was
of,
like a
exactly.
sweet spot in the middle. There was a sweet mm-hmm. spot in the middle. So let me comment on that. There has been a lot of research now on vitamin D. An enormous amount of research that shows that low levels of vitamin D are associated, I underline, associated with higher risk of innumerable diseases, psychiatric diseases, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, autoimmunity, cancer, and on it goes. Now, the people who are in charge of deciding what gets implemented as health policy and supplement policy in America have looked at all that evidence and they've said, well, that's very interesting, but that's correlation is not causation. That's just an association. And it may be that sick people just show low levels of vitamin D and that it's not, and they're giving them vitamin D isn't going to help them. Hmm. And, you know, I understand that argument, but I think I suspect that giving those people vitamin D would be very beneficial. But not enough studies have been done over term, because they're very expensive to do, to follow people, make sure they're actually taking their vitamins, they comply. It's easier to do correlation studies where you look at thousands and thousands of people, check their blood and say, you know, is it low or is it high? Not, you know, and not even ask them, are you taking supplements? Are you getting a lot of sun? Those are the things that would tell us, does supplemental vitamin D have a role to play in either causing health or causing disease? So on the flip side of that, mm-hmm. we cannot really say that the people who have high levels of vitamin D are necessarily taking lots of vitamin D. They may just, for one reason or another, metabolically have higher levels of vitamin D. An example of which is there's some people have high cholesterol and they're on vegetarian diets. So the body has the ability to synthesize vitamin D to some extent from sunlight. And, you know, there may be certain conditions that are a threat to health that causes the body to retain or build up levels of vitamin D. I'm not saying that this study is wrong. I think it's interesting. I think we should have a caution flag. I don't think we should, you know, we're cautious about our patients. We measure their vitamin D. We make sure their vitamin D doesn't go through the roof.
Dr. Hoffman, I did notice one thing about this study while you were explaining this.
Sure.
When I did the conversion of the nanomoles, because that's the unit of measurement they use, those with low vitamin D, that translates into 19 ng per dl, which is how we would measure it.
Right.
And the ones who had high vitamin D were 38 ng per dl. In our world, all of that is low.
So if this were the case, then what we consider, if this were true, then what we consider a desirable vitamin D that we try to get our patients to would be undesirable.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But that's not,
And they found
really
that the sweet spot was 70 nanomoles per liter, which translates to 26 ng per dl.
Well, that may be the case in February in Denmark.
Right.
But I don't know about here. You know, I gotta say.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about a study that, you know, shows that. I mean, there's so much evidence of the benefits of vitamin D.
Absolutely,
for so
I agree with you. And so many years of it at this point.
And so many thankful patients because we really transformed their whole well-being, you know, sometimes within days or weeks of beginning to take vitamin D, they feel entirely better.
Right.
And, you know, so I don't know. I think it's – thank you for sending provocative research our way. But, you know, there are going to be some studies – that are sometimes garnering headlines that can be invoked as a caution about using one or another supplement all the time. I mean, there was, we saw that with calcium, for example. Calcium supposedly increased the risk of cardiovascular disease in what was thought to be a very definitive study. And I did a podcast on this week, which is our previous podcast, where I did a little potpourri, nutritional potpourri. And it turns out when they redid that research, looking at a large number of studies, they found absolutely no correlation between taking calcium and higher risk of cardiovascular disease, even when people took a pretty whopping amount of calcium. So, you know, it might stand to reason that, you know, take too much calcium, that's going to go to your arteries. But according to, you know, more recent studies, so the studies actually conflict with one another, but a bigger, better study, this is a 2010 study that showed there was about a 30% higher risk of cardiovascular disease, people taking lots of calcium. Well, a study done subsequently showed no, that wasn't the case.
Well, there you have it.
So, you know, we don't want to jump to too hasty conclusions. But on the other hand, you know, we have to be careful. We don't want to go overboard. We don't want to, you know, there is the possibility that overzealous application of certain nutritional supplements could backfire. That's why, you know, we're pretty conservative about, you know, among holistic practitioners about embracing new fads or panaceas in the vitamin world, you know.
Yeah. We always have to have a critical eye. Yep.
Right. Because the dictum, you know, of Hippocrates was first do no harm.
Yes.
That's what doctors were taught to say. It's actually not in the Hippocratic Oath, but it's first do primum non nocere is one of his Latin phrases that he taught to his student doctors, the first doctor in Western civilization, or the first one we know about. And that's something that we ought to adhere to. At first, do no harm.
Yes. Yes.
So on that note, let's not invoke the possibility that we're going to do any more harm today and conclude today's broadcast. I think we've said enough. Those of you who enjoy listening to this Q&A with Layla, we do it once weekly. We'll do it again next week. And we have lots more podcasts available. So please subscribe via iTunes or Stitcher or by whatever method you listen to Intelligent Medicine.
Send us your questions.
Send us your questions. Please.
Yeah. At radioprogram@AOL.com.
Indeed. And some very interesting questions today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.